I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. I am joined today by my peeps. Peep number one, Father Garrett Burns.
Hey.
And peep number two, Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
Shout out to my peeps.
Do people still say that?
Yeah, Chad, say it again. Give it in a homily, maybe.
All right. What up, my peeps?
Hello, fellow young people.
They said it until you just, you killed it. You officially killed it.
I feel good about having that sort of power.
You guys like peeps?
Oh, they're awful.
No.
Do you?
It's fun, of course not.
I'm not an animal.
You put them in the microwave and they just kind of like blow up. That's fun. But
I know one person that likes peeps. I think she listens to the podcast. And
then we respect you as a human and with your decisions. But,
and she's a peeps purist. People like bring her other. Nope. She only wants the traditional classic peeps. No, nothing peep flavored, nothing. She is the only person I have ever met in my life that likes peeps. So
they're not good.
Well, this episode finds us peeping away. That doesn't sound good.
No.
Scratch that.
Oh my
this
gosh.
This episode finds us toiling away in the studio of Saint Joan of Arc. So we're Saint Joan of Arc today because I have been surprised at how much of a following she has here in the House of Formation.
Hey.
So a few weeks back, so Drew has a custom at WSU and you did it at St. Izzy's and things of a bracket of saints where people vote on the saints and they move forward in the bracket. And so I borrowed your bracket and set it up for the seminarians. Go, we're still working on it. We're down to our final four. But I have been amazed at what a powerhouse Saint Joan of Arc has been. So I just want to read you the people that she has defeated.
Yeah,
I did not see this coming. So she starts off against Clement of Rome. Okay, I can see that. Yeah. Joan of Arc, sure. Next up, Ignatius of Loyola.
So she was a 10 seed then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she beat Ignatius out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Goes up against John Bosco.
Okay.
Beats Bosco out.
Wow. That surprised me that Bosco made a Sweet 16 run even.
Yeah, he did do good. He beat out Polycarp and Dominic.
Dominic's the three Dominic. Seed in yeah. that region. Wow. Yeah.
He was an upset. Then Joan of Arc comes up against Maximilian Kolbe.
Which again, every time I've done this bracket, Kolbe, when I started, Maximilian Kolbe was like a 12 seed.
That's a mislabeling. I
know,
think.
And he always makes a run. I love Maximilian Kolbe, but I don't think he's a Final Four contender. I'm going to get a lot of guff about this, but okay. So she's playing Maximilian Kolbe.
He is the one that beat her by one vote. And it's only because several of the guys decided they didn't like Joan of Arc that much. And so they rallied around and were running a campaign, not so much for Maximilian Kolbe as against Joan of Arc.
Yeah,
and so
tough.
She got beat by one. So Max is in the Final Four right now. And it could go either way. It's between him and Therese of Lisieux. Jeez. And it could go either way.
This exact thing set off, like, we had to take a deep breath at Izzy's because it was getting so heated.
Got pretty loud on the floor over this discussion.
And Colby's making a run. Like, and maybe it was the first time we did this. And one of the guys yells in the lobby and he's kind of joking, kind of not. He goes, "All he did was die." And we're like, "All right, we got to take a deep breath here." Okay.
So we've got it going on right now, Final Four. We've got Maximilian Kolbe against Therese of Lisieux. That's tight. It ends tonight. And then on the other side is JP2,
of course,
no surprise.
Of course.
Yeah. And he is just mopping the floor with Juan Diego. Which,
come on.
Frankly, I'm amazed that Juan Diego made it to the Final Four, but honestly.
Here was when we did this, and we're getting kind of inside baseball here. The argument for Juan Diego is, without Juan Diego, you have like tens of millions less Catholics. And obviously that's not all how it works, but few humans in history have been as directly responsible for people becoming Catholic as Juan Diego.
I voted for Philip Neri, but he beat out Philip Neri.
Okay, that's interesting. John Paul II always, when you do it with young people, and that's one that you've, like, I think you could argue that there's not any sense of history
more. Yeah, I'm favoring him to take the whole thing.
But
it's looking like it'll be the Polish against the others. Max is leading ahead of Therese right now, so it could be Max versus JP2. So, but
good for Poland.
Good for Poland. It has been good discussion. So I'm committing to doing it again next year, but with a new set of saints. Yep. So just kind of see where I can come up with 64 more saints.
Blessed Sacrament had this as an elective for eighth graders 1 year.
Oh yeah. So Father Grellinger was telling, and that's a brilliant way to teach
really
about the
good
saints.
Idea.
So him and Bergkamp would go in and they'd have like a minute presentation on each saint and then like make the kids take a vote right there and then and there. And so then they had to give a brand new presentation on the saints if they won, and a great way to teach junior high kids about saints. Yeah, I was really, really impressed with that.
We should be getting royalties off this. We made this at like an old Chicago, like on the patio at old Chicago.
Did you help with this, Garrett?
Yeah.
I've been giving all the credit to Drew. So.
I was there. He has much deeper knowledge of church history and all this stuff. So I
and
just,
I toiled on I, this for, yeah. for years, perfecting the bracket and things like that.
I was going to say, it's not listed on the sheet that you gave me, but I assume they were all, there's a number one seed and all.
And, that, and that's why and when you say it, I can remember who they were, where they are and where they fit.
Because definitely guys have been having that debate too. Is this a number one seed saint or
the one
or
seeds are John Paul II, Aquinas, Augustine, and Francis.
Augustine got beat out of the
that's crazy.
The front. That's Aquinas made it. He lost to Maximilian Kolbe, so he beat Francis de Sales.
And it's when it gets mixed up with like, okay, maybe you like
the most
Max Kolbe, and that's fine.
Or who you think was holier, which is not necessarily an objective thing.
The one that also made a surprise, so Juan Diego, Joan of Arc, and Monica made a far run.
And that's where it gets the debate is hard because without Monica, there's not Augustine. Without Augustine, there's not like the first thousand
Monica
years
made
of,
it further than Augustine, which is
again,
crazy.
The absurdity. Why doesn't everyone just think like I think? The bracket is fun. I always loved the bracket.
It was good. Although I also told the guys that T of Lisieux won against Charles Borromeo. We have a first class relic of Charles Borromeo here in the house. It's Bishop's patron saint. So I told him I was going to take a photo of all the guys that voted against it.
Just let
Bishop know that. Well, in other news, we are recording this not too long after Easter. And so as is typical with most households, there's been a lot of candy that has passed through the house due to Easter. The people want to know, what is your go-to candy? So if you're preparing your Easter basket or basket of any time of the year, what candy needs to be in there? This is as important. You need a candy bracket.
Yeah.
That would be a lot.
During the pandemic, I made all kinds of brackets.
fast food or restaurants?
I made restaurants in Manhattan bracket.
Oh, wow.
And took it down after a day because a lot of Izzy's donors owned restaurants around Manhattan. Oh, yeah. And it was not a good look when some of these were getting knocked out and like people were disparaging like ex-restaurants. Like, okay, I'm not going to, we can't let them see. Well, let's just take a deep breath here.
Yeah, the guys want to make a bracket about the priest of the diocese. I told them that's not allowed.
I talked to the students this week about that.
I don't think good can come from
that. This week we talked about doing that.
So candy.
Candy is easier to do. Reese's. Yeah, there's no better combination than peanut butter and chocolate.
It's solid. Reese's any Reese's
pieces,
product.
Reese's Pieces are my favorite, but any Reese's product.
If in the chocolate peanut butter world, Butterfinger is, I think you can't beat Butterfinger. Except my favorite candy is cherry sours. I love cherry sours. Yeah, since when I worked at Dillon's, I would get a 15-minute break and the cherry sours were $1. But I got a 10% discount, so 90 cents. And then there was 8 cents of tax. So with a $1 bill, I could always get a bag of cherry sours. And that's what I would do during my break is eat a bag of cherry sours.
I don't know if I've ever had
a
cherry sour.
They're not
sour.
Like super popular. People don't necessarily like them. I did a wedding back.
That's what you did on your break was eat a bag.
Full bag and read the sports page. Yeah.
What am I going to do with my time? Yeah.
Icon of health.
Jolly. But I did a wedding back in last April. It was the couple were in it was second marriage. Spouses had deceased, things like that. So they didn't want gifts. So their gifts he sent, and I didn't know this till I got to the wedding, was that everyone had to bring a bag of cherry sours to like get into the church. That was the joke. It was a small, it was 60, 70 person wedding.
Uh-huh.
So I had 60 bags of cherry sours waiting for me in the gathering space of St. Paul.
Did you eat them all?
Because he knew them. No, we had a big party the next day and I was handing them out of prizes.
Proud of you.
Good work.
Yeah, that's a real story.
I could go with both the chocolate and peanut, you know, Reese's product. You just can't go wrong. I'm also a big fan of Butterfinger. If I had to pick between which one I would pick, probably would depend on what I had last. Like if I had Reese's recently, okay, I haven't had a Butterfinger in a while. If I had Butterfinger, my dark horse candidate, my cherry sours are Swedish Fish.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Swedish Fish. And similar at the Mount, they used to have like a bin of Swedish Fish that you could use your dollars for the lunch line on. And so that was stay awake in class food or driving a lot. So I'd always have like a bag of Swedish Fish. But I have discovered a new one. So shout out to the students of St. Mary's Colgan because they were the ones that told me about it. Apparently it's Father LeBenz's favorite candy. Nerd clusters. Have you tried these things?
No,
I don't know what that is.
They're, do you like nerds?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So all the, which was like a childhood favorite, all the deliciousness of nerds, but they're like glued to a chewy center that is like a cross between a fruit chew and a jelly bean.
Oh,
so you get the crunch and nerd flavor, and then inside is jelly bean fruit snack, and they are drug addictive. Like I bought a bag of them, like, oh, I'll just have a few of these, and I'm ashamed to say how quickly I ate all of those.
That does sound delicious.
I would have never got them, but the students at St. Mary's Colgan told me that I needed to try them. I told Father LeBenz I was going to mention him, and he got more excited than I've seen him get about much more important things about nerd clusters. Yeah, he's pretty excitable. So if you're not, you got to try nerd. I'll nerd try clusters. Cherry sours. You got to go out and find
awesome.
Some nerd clusters because they are amazing.
Do you guys like Mexican candy?
No, I don't.
Who does?
The yeah. only I found what I do like, I think it's called Pelon Pelo Rico. Like they're like a tamarind with some.
Oh, see,
spice
you already lost
it.
Me. No, you already lost me.
And it like it's squeezes the out the top, and it looks like it's a guy's like spiky hair.
No, it's
pretty
not
cool.
The place
That's
for candy.
Awful.
It's great. For spice.
Every year. We have a Spanish immersion, or every other year, Spanish immersion summer, and guys will get excited, like, okay, go buy some authentic Mexican stuff, and they'll buy some Mexican candy, and they try one, and then it sits until 2 years later in the cabinet, because nobody wants to eat it, because Mexico does a lot of things really, really well.
Love their work with Coca-Cola.
Great with Coca-Cola. Their combo of meat and cheese is like nowhere else. But they suck at candy. I'm sorry. There's
that's
no other way to put
so
it.
That's so funny.
Duvaline, it's like basically just icing. There's some good stuff.
Oh, I do not. There are acceptable, adequate things. I have never found a Mexican. I'm like, that's good. That's never been done that way before.
I'm going to have to try to find some. I don't want to have to eat cherry sours, though, so maybe I'll just...
Yeah. Oh, there. You're so dehydrated after, man.
We brought for our Easter vigil party, I bought 2 party packs of Jarrito soda. I mean, Mexican soda.
Yeah.
Great. Guys loved it. There was even a guy excited for a tamarindo soda, which, again, it's a little weird, but he won. I'm like, more power to you, man. But Jarritos, great. But we did not have any Mexican candy there because it was a celebration.
Those will all go in my Easter basket. Those can come That's to me. So That's funny. Fine.
Even like they'll do a piñata and they bring the candy back and it just sits in bowls in the house because no one really wants it. Sorry, Mexico.
We're going to get so much grief. From
I love
American
so many
cathedral
things about your culture, but I don't believe in your confectionery goods. Well, let's move on from the topic of sweet candy to sweet, sweet celibacy.
Jeez, oh my gosh.
Just,
oh no.
Really good at segues. Master of art over here. So we've talked a little bit kind of tangentially about celibacy in the past. We touched on it in the episode of when we talked about loneliness. So that's kind of the negative side of people think of celibacy. We also touched on it when we talked about intimacy with God as part of the a byproduct of it. And so those are kind of the two, I don't know, parts of the spectrum on celibacy, but I thought we needed an episode to just really kind of look at it and talk about it. But as I thought about what we needed to say, I had trouble categorizing it, and I'll say why in a moment. The topic is just kind of throwing out wide, what should guys know about celibacy? I think for me, part of the reason I had trouble kind of, okay, what should we talk about? And I teach a class on celibacy, but at the same time, the mental real estate that I thought celibacy would take up when I was discerning is much more than it actually is in my priesthood. Like I when I was in seminary, I thought about celibacy a lot.
Okay, yeah.
A lot.
No, I was catching there because I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought about it a lot. And then as a priest, I really don't think about it that much. And so people have been asking, like, you need a podcast about celibacy. And you're right. But I'm like, but what are we going to talk about? It's the chosen way of life. I don't have regrets about it. I live it. I see a lot of fruit and good, but I don't actually think about so it rarely comes up in my prayer. And so I guess that's why I'm just kind of throwing this out in a very general way. What should guys know about celibacy, or what should we say about celibacy?
Right. So one of the big things when I joined, I saw celibacy as the necessary evil. And I use that as like, I use that phrase because in a book that was really influential for me when God asked for an undivided heart, that's how he kind of describes the vision of celibacy. So that's how I saw it, as like this thing I'll need to put on my back to carry in order to me to be a priest. It's like, it's what's expected. It's what I'm supposed to do to be a priest. So it is like the necessary blood pact that I have to make to lose something of myself. And so that's the first thing that I would say, is that when I started to not see it as that, and to see it as the blessing that I was being actually a gift, which I'd been told it was, but I never really believed that, that was transformative for me. It's not just this thing that I have to like kind of just carry, and it'll be droop, and it'll always be like keeping me down. If I'm just brave and tough enough, then I can still be happy. But it's a gift that's being given to me that has been a source of a lot of happiness.
Yeah, I think that's a great, in a nutshell. I heard it in the language of gift when I was in seminary, but I don't know if I ever actually believed it. I'm like, this is one of those spiritual gifts that aren't really a gift, right? Sort of thing. But I do now. I experience my celibacy. I see it. I experience, by and large, I live it as a gift. I really do feel like that's it's a gift in my life.
Yeah, I think I agree that that's how I initially thought about it, maybe as a sacrifice, or we talk about spiritual fatherhood some, especially getting into theology. And definitely those things still come up, and it is still painful at times. So I don't want to diminish that. And right. I agree that I don't think about it as much as a priest as I did as a seminarian. And yeah, there's still a constant ache there in different ways. And I think about spiritual fatherhood a lot. For me, that's honestly comes up more like I almost look at the life of fathers of families, and that challenges me more in my own priesthood to like make sure I'm not living a bachelor life, or just like I could almost like coast if I don't have someone in the room next to me every night, like challenging me to get better and to give myself fully. So, but in this, I agree that I've come to see it and live it more as a gift of radical availability or openness and freedom. So in a lot of different ways, one of just the people we get to know and the places we get to go into their lives, and just like cool stuff. We've talked about that before. I think like cool stuff I've got to do that I would never been able to do if I wasn't a celibate priest, you know, trips, but also just people that I know and get to be a part of their life. So I think that is where I've been able to make that shift from a cross just to bear and drag to this real gift, is that it's allowed me to be open and available to so many things that I wouldn't have been otherwise.
Yeah. And so obviously the bachelor imagery is bad.
Yeah.
But the good parts, like the parts that make being a bachelor in a certain sense cool, are still there in the availability, like the ability to say yes. Like that's the ability to say yes to cool, beautiful, exciting things. That is still there with the celibacy, with the expectation of fatherhood, connection to a parish, those types of things. So it's not just like I go to Kansas City for the weekend or something like that. Not that type of bachelorhood, but the availability. Yeah, I can be there. I can show up to that. Yeah, I can say yes to this. I can be here. I can sit here with you. Like that availability, energy, that's, I found that to be intensely the case.
Because I'm not exclusive with a wife and family. I am like diffused. I'm open to anything that could happen today and anyone that could make an imposition on my time or just like need me there. So.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. The greater danger, and this is opposite of what I would have thought. Like when I was in seminary, I think of celibacy, what would be the danger? Oh, it'd be temptation, or, you know, beautiful woman, or whatnot. And that has been less of a danger in myself. What has been more of a danger that I did not anticipate was that temptation towards being a well-heeled bachelor.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, yeah, I don't make a lot of money, but most of my money is disposable income. Yeah, I'm the one that's in charge of my schedule. Yeah, I don't have to go home to the wife and kids every night. Now, there's a reason for that, so that hopefully I can use all of those things for sacrificial purposes and do good with those things. But the temptation, which is a much more prevalent and reality than I would have anticipated as a young man, is, well, I can just use those things for myself. I can use my expendable income. I can use my time. I can use my lack of commitment to a specific person to do whatever fun thing I want to do and just become a generally kind, well-heeled gentleman sort of bachelor. Yeah. And that's the greater danger that I live with in my celibacy. And I never really, didn't anticipate that.
I was so scared of celibacy as a young man. I never would have dreamed of the other, like that. Like I was so nervous about celibacy that element of it would never have even crossed my mind. Of that aspect. And so even hearing that, I think is helpful, that there are these two kind of extremes of it.
Yeah. And I don't feel what, you know, when I was young, I know we talked about this in a previous episode, but I don't really feel a lack of intimacy in my life. And it almost makes me wonder, I'll be honest, in the prayer sometimes, like, for me, is there going to come a time when celibacy hurts more? Because I expected it to hurt a lot, and it's hurt so much less than as far as sacrifice, and I don't feel a lack of intimacy. I feel like I have very intimate friendships. I feel like there are people who know me deeply, who I know them deeply, that relationship is actually increased and encouraged and facilitated by my celibacy rather than hindered by it. And so I don't really feel a lack in a painful way. And I thought I would. And that's not been the case for me. And that's why I don't think about it as much, because I tend to think about things that are hurting at the moment. And for me, it's not a lot in that realm.
Yeah, there's little things that have been an ache for me at times. Of one thing I think of a lot is just like going to my son's basketball game or soccer game or something growing up. And I had cool experiences last week. Just play noon basketball sometimes at the Y, and there's another guy, he's like a Protestant pastor, assistant pastor, something like that. So sometimes we just talk about that a little bit, and it was right after Easter. So I just asked him how his Easter was, kind of expecting to almost like talk shop or like, you know, did you guys have baptisms and stuff like this? And he just like, oh yeah, it was good. You know, I took my son up to Kansas City and we went to the aquarium and we had a great time. And there was something in me that was like, wow, I'm not like, I don't miss that. Or like, in a sense, that seems way less to me than what I just went through at Easter. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad that I can't be married and do everything I just did as a priest, because like, I'm sure like that was a great Easter, but like knowing what I just went through at the Triduum, and like, you know, we pour ourselves into that so much and you see so much grace and movement in people's lives. So I don't know. That was just a tangible experience of this, of like, there's an ache there, but then God does something bigger when I've just given that yes. So
also, you don't really want to argue for something from a negative. So that's why this is like maybe the fourth or fifth thing we brought up. But 6 years a priest, your vision of marriage and how marriages work gets shattered. Shattered.
Yes, that's true.
In the priesthood.
Yeah.
Right? Of hearing confessions and being in marriage preps married couples counseling, doing annulments, even talking, you know, our friends now, a lot of our friends are getting 6-7 years or married and talking to them, and they're sharing of their beautiful marriages that are not what they would seem, not in like a something is really wrong, but that this is marriage and it's
tough.
When you're 18, you're like, how awesome would it be to have 3.5 children who are all tremendously well-behaved? Probably one of them will play basketball at Wichita State, and one of them will be, you know, a great scholar, something like that, and always have a very well-paying job and things like that. It's like, well, that ain't how any of these things happen. And so again, that's like the last of the things,
right?
But that is something that I've... It's not like I'm thankful, like, thank goodness I didn't get married, because it's still tremendously beautiful. But it does kind of... show that nothing is as rosy as it seems. Mm-hmm.
I talk with the seminarians a lot in our celibacy class. We have a section on that, just like, we do tend to have an over romantic side of a view of marriage, and when we're young, and that's natural, and that's not a bad thing. But again, as we're discerning, so we got to be realistic about, okay, you're not going to find just the perfect person, everything's going to be smooth. Say you could, you know, there's lots of beautiful wedding marriages out there, but they also have their struggles. And I'm sure your parents or friends would tell you. We were talking about that one time. It's like, yeah, my wife has a short trigger, and that trigger's name is me. and they, you know, they have kids, they love each other, they've done it, but he recognized, yeah, no one can set my wife off quicker than I can. And to balance that with this person that they love and they're sacrificial to.
Yeah. And so I think that the fairness there and realizing that, again, let's find the middle ground with all of these things. Yeah. I just, the intimacy thing, I think, is so accurate. I've experienced loneliness as a priest to the degree that I probably thought that I would in the best moments of seminary, of that every human being, the married man is lonely, the most popular person in the world is lonely, all of those things. That's always a call to prayer. But there is always fatherhood. And there's always places to be a father. Some places I want to be a dad. Some places that, like the dads in our pews, it's like, I don't really want to be a dad like this. I want to be a dad at the game where my kid's hitting the winning shot and things like that. But there's other elements of fatherhood that are just as hard as I admit that the married fatherhood would have been in a different way.
I am constantly amazed. I was far more lonely before I was ever ordained than I live life now. And, you know, I had good friends. I had good family. But there was a deeper seated loneliness that I couldn't put my finger on. And I think you guys, one of you, it might have been you, Drew, I don't know if it was on the podcast or one of the retreats here at the house, one of you, I think, put together the question, you know, the secret fear in Edward's house is, can the Lord be enough? Can he actually fulfill all these desires? And at the basis of all of our sin and of all of it is this idea, can the Lord be enough? And certainly that's the case of a guy contemplating celibacy. Can the Lord be enough? And I agonized over that question as a young man, and it sounds trite, but yeah, he can. I'm constantly amazed at how much the Lord gives and compared to what I have given to him, and that he has filled those things. And that just really does show out to me when I look back. Yeah, I was lonely and making some poor choices as a young man. And then the Lord comes in ordination and celibacy. And somehow after making this vow of celibacy, I am actually far less lonely than I was before that. And again, just the Lord stepping in his utmost graciousness.
And that's probably why all the things we've talked about of making a holy hour and prayer is so important. Like that's when celibacy does become unbearable or just becomes a necessary evil, when that life of prayer is not there in right. The priest, you know? And so then it does become inexplicable and not lived with joy because that the Lord being enough is not there in that moment of intimate prayer. So,
yeah. And I think just kind of segueing it real quick, just I would throw out there to live a healthy celibacy, prayer's got to be there. Priest has to be praying. I think there has to be a sacrificial thought towards that celibacy, so that you are using that freedom towards the service of others. So it has to be other orientated. Celibacy is both oriented to God, but it can't just be then reflected back to ourself. It has to be other oriented. So there has to be prayer. There has to be still an other orientation. And then for a healthy celibacy, you got to have friends. We aren't meant to live in solitary confinement emotionally or humanly. And so to live healthy celibacy, I always tell the guys, you have to have friends that are both priests and not priests. I say, if you look around and all your friends are priests, that's a problem. If you look around and none of your friends are priests, that's a problem. You have to have both to live a healthy celibacy in the priesthood of real good nurturing friendship. So those are like my top three things I throw out to the guys for healthy priesthood. It has to be other oriented. It has to be rooted in prayer, and you have to have good friendships. I don't know if you guys throw anything else into that list.
No, I just thought of one time in praying with Holy Thursday, it really hit me and it stuck with me. It's like, I talked about then, like, it's like wasted food. Like food is meant to be consumed. And so the Eucharist was given to us meant to be consumed, but the priesthood too, like, if I am celibate and not given, other oriented, then I'm like, you know, that 7 week old, whatever gross thing in your fridge, you're like wasted food. And that's like the grossest thing when it should be given and consumed to give life to another. And it just sits. And so I go back to that a lot of when I kind of just want to sit and isolate, but my freedom and my availability to say yes is for another. So don't be wasted food. Don't be a wasted Eucharistic being.
I like that. Well, before we close out for the day, we have to make one important announcement. This coming Saturday, May 27th, the diocese will be ordaining 4 new men to be transitional deacons. If you've never been to an ordination, you are allowed to come. It's open to anyone that wants to join us. If you're discerning a vocation, come see what it looks like on that stage. It's a beautiful mass, beautiful ceremony. It'll be at the cathedral at 10 a.m. We will have 4 guys. We'll have Caleb Kuster-Steffen will be Deacon Caleb, and he will be serving at St. Patrick's Parish in Chanute, Kansas. We'll have Matthew Cook. Deacon Matthew will be serving at Holy Savior Parish here in Wichita. We'll have Miles Swigert. Deacon Miles will be serving at St. Mary's Parish in Derby. And we will have Jesus Banuelos. Deacon Jesus will be at Our Lady of Lourdes in Pittsburgh, Kansas. So if you want to come to those celebrations, please feel free to. But if nothing else, please offer prayer on behalf of these men as they prepare to make that great step towards the priesthood in being ordained deacons this Saturday. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Garrett's got the final word today.
This comes from St. Augustine, just a good word for me a lot, for a lot of us in just trying to be bold in prayer and service of others, even in our vocation. He says, God has promised us mercy for our mistakes. He has not promised us tomorrow for our procrastination.
See you next week.